Hello and welcome to episode 121 of Speak Beastie for October 4th, 2020. I'm Anne.
I'm Oreo.
I'm Juliana.
And I'm Marjolaine.
It's October. We're officially in Spook Boosty season.
Oh, boy. are there any ghosts that are considered beasts? I'm just thinking off the top of my head.
I think the beasts are considered, I'm sorry, ghosts are considered to be beings, according to
Yeah,
Fantastic
that's what
Beasts,
I was thinking.
But you know, let me double
check. They are not been. They are they are have been.
Ah! yeah.
That's not my joke. It's in the book, so I can't claim that.
Oh, okay. Well, I love a good pun anyway. Fabulous.
So how are we all doing? How are we feeling?
Well, you know, it's COVID.
Yeah.
Doing the best we can. And Aria, you just moved and you're settling in pretty well, correct?
Yes. This is the third episode I'm now recording from the UK. So, no, it's been great. I love being here. I felt at home almost immediately. So, you know.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's so nice. It just makes it like a move feel like it feels like you did it correctly and you did it for a reason. You're like, aha, I've achieved my goal, if you feel like you belong in the new place that you moved to. So happy for you. That's great.
And you know, now with everything locking down again, it feels like I've just managed to grab a time window when I could actually move.
Yeah, that too.
Now you don't have to ask me the news from France.
Yeah.
To go from France to
Marjolaine, tell me when your country is open to me to pass through.
Well, I have to say that the US is still a burning pile of
Lord.
Dung.
Yeah. Burning is quite fitting if you're on the West Coast.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think there's too many things in the United States that are like actually going well. I'm trying to think of something off the top of my head that I'm like, wow, that was great.
Yeah.
No. I was going to say that, well, Great British Bake Off premiered on Netflix last night, but that's the Great British Bake Off. So we don't actually have any claim on that.
Was that the day that it was coming? Oh, I'll have to go watch it.
Oreo is in the best place because she is also the closest from where the film has started shooting.
Oh yeah.
Start filming.
Oh yeah.
So.
And I couldn't get in theory get the vegan butterbeer. I haven't done it yet, but
yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I definitely need to test that out. I've already been asked by Rex if I can start a shipping service to the US.
Oh, I know friend of the show Tyler Starr had some and he's in the US. I don't know where he's getting it from though.
Interesting. I definitely would be interested to know if it tastes like significantly different than the actual butterbeer, because I can't imagine there are too many ingredients in a drink that would be super non-vegan. I'm just trying to, unless they use some kind of like milk product. Is butterbeer
they have cream on top of the butterbeer.
Yeah, I think it's mostly in the whipped topping.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, because the actual drink itself probably doesn't have anything that's not vegan in it. Like Coke is vegan. There's nothing in Coke because it's all chemicals.
Yeah.
There's nothing in Coke that is from an animal, and I imagine the actual soda itself is kind of like that. But yeah, I think you're right. The cream is probably the part where they get into the vegan versus non-vegan issue, and maybe some of the colorings, because some colorings come from, sorry, dietitian here. Some colorings are derived from bugs.
Oh, yeah, there's like a red coloring that's, like, derived from bugs, right?
Yeah, and there are a few other ones, too. But, yay. I love eating bugs.
So, speaking of filming, Marjolaine, I believe you have some news for us.
Yeah.
Yes, let's hear from the Phoenix Register, Marjo.
And now a message from our sponsors. Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wiggs knees and how.
Yes, finally, for the Phoenix Register, we have a good news. Filming has started.
Woo!
Yay!
Yay!
So it probably started early September, because we got picture of the rebuilding, I guess, of a set that may be Berlin. I'm not sure from where the news of this set being Berlin come from, but I read it on MuggleNet, so I trust it. And but it looks like they reused the New York slams for this set, so interesting.
You know, recycle if you can.
But we know that they recycled the set because the New York set turns into Paris in the second movie, and now I guess it's the same set that will turn into Berlin, I guess. So
I'm not sure how I feel about that. In my head I was like, that's kind of cheap, but then I was like, maybe it's good for the environment and maybe it just works. I don't know.
I mean, as someone who's worked in like a convention booth building for like 5 years, let me tell you how long they use the materials. Like, they literally set them up for the 5 days for the booth and then it's in the trash.
Oh my gosh.
So wow. If they recycle, that's actually good news, I think.
Yeah.
I was just thinking too about the sets that we used in high school for our musical theater productions, and we definitely reused the living crap out of everything that we had, literally everything. But again, our budget was quite a bit lower than Warner Brothers, so that has to be taken into account as well.
I mean, maybe they're just like repainting the fronts and they're just sort of sticking with the like frames and stuff and just being like, okay, we have a frame of houses and we're just gonna paint new stuff over it, because why start from scratch if you can?
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I think it confirms that at least a part of the movie will be in Berlin. But for now, it was just theory.
I feel the pressure. Sophie already called me out and she's like, do you know what? I realize you now need to become the new Marshall Lane and be an expert for your country. I was like, yeah, I'm just going to get you on so I don't have to do it alone.
Yeah, that's the time you choose to leave your country. So
yeah,
yeah. Sophie is still in Germany.
Is that why you moved to the UK so you wouldn't have to be the official Berlin correspondent?
I mean, even if I were in Germany, I don't live in Berlin. So. I've been quite some time, so, and my sister's actually possibly moving to Berlin, so there might be reasons in the future once you can travel again that I can go and check out Berlin stuff. But yeah,
cool. We'll send you on a scouting trip as soon as we hear back.
So the other confirmation that we got that filming has started is two interviews from Jude Law and Eddie Redmayne, who are talking about this first week's sunset, and specifically they are talking about all the new COVID rules, because of course they need to work with that to keep everyone safe. And I think that's quite interesting. So I took the two quotes because I think it's helping us to see that they are managing at least the same everyday life that we all have. So so Eddie says that we are 2 weeks in. So it was last week that he says that. And again, it's a whole new process. It's a whole new normal, testing frequently, masks. And I wonder actually whether the masks would affect creativity in some ways. Maybe that was a bit ignorant, but I just thought as humans, we do need interaction to spark from each other. That is really reassuring that it is a different process, but it still feels like it's fizzing and that everyone is working at the top of the game. So that's good. But I wonder how they manage the masks thing. I guess they need to put out the mask to play, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, people have made whole films since quarantine.
Yeah, of course.
And you don't hear like super bad news. So I suppose, obviously, those were like smaller films, but I suppose the film industry has adapted and has come up with a way to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine they're kind of working like the way the NBA has done, where they're creating like a bubble.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And actually, that's what Jude is saying. He said that they are creating bubbles within the crew, so certain departments don't intermingle.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Film crews adapt, and they are taking it so swiftly and seriously. It didn't feel too unfamiliar. So.
Yeah, I guess the ones who are like in the most danger are probably the actors, because they're the ones who have to interact with the makeup crew and the set crew and the costume crew and the directors.
Yeah, they can't wear masks on like while they're filming either. Right. That's not historically accurate for that time frame.
Yeah. It's too late for the Spanish flu, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, I don't think they would have medical grade masks at this point, like the ones we have. Yeah, not really a thing back then, I'm pretty sure, but just a guess, though. Yeah.
Queenie comes out wearing one, it's got that cute art deco on it. She's like, oh, I'm just feeling great, Greeny, thanks.
I could 100% see that. That'd be great. I'm here for this parody. Whoever's going to write this and film this, I'm here for it. Send me that fanfic, my friends.
But anyway, even without mask, or most importantly without mask, Jude's beard is absolutely glorious.
I need to
say that.
I've seen an interview of him where he said he considered shaving it because obviously they weren't filming for quite a while and just regrowing it. But then he was like, he didn't want to go back into the itching phase.
Apparently. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh god,
I can't relate because I don't have a beard, but apparently there's an itching phase.
I've heard about that. Like from my husband, he talks about how it'll be growing out, and then at a certain point, it's like, and then suddenly it's luxe and luxurious.
Yeah, and he looks so proud that the makeup department will have nothing to put on his face to make him look like Dumbledore.
Yeah. Because it's naturally gray now.
Yeah.
From all the stress of the world.
Yeah.
It indicates that sometimes are supposed to, there is supposed to be sometimes between movie 2 and movie 3, because if they want to be accurate with the beard getting much longer, that will indicate that at least, I mean, I don't know, 1 year or two, I don't know, but
I'm still confused with the whole time jump they're planning to do.
Yeah, because I mean, I think we're covering like another 16 years in between movies 3 and 5, right? So we're gonna have to start doing some big time jumps.
Yeah, but it will fit if Dumbledore is clearly grayer and a longer beard, so that will fit, I guess, if we have a big time jump. Anyway, speaking of time jump, they still didn't change the release date, so it is still November 12, 2021. I'm not sure they will keep it that way with the filming just starting, but we'll see.
I mean, I suppose at this point, everything is up in the air anyways. Who knows?
Widow just got moved. So
yeah, and also, like, who knows? In 2 months, filming could be shut down entirely again because...
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Whatever happens.
Dum-dums.
So.
Warner Brothers stayed quite discreet about the start of filming. They didn't make a big announcement with picture and so, because I think they learned that with the Batman it can be stopped again at any moment. So yeah, even if the Batman they restart the shoot quite soon, after, but yeah, there's still a chance that they will have to stop the filming for a couple of weeks at any time, so we'll see. We hope not, but
cross your fingers, hope to not die of COVID. I'm pretty proud of myself. I just thought of that, like, and my brain's already pretty tired. So, buckle in, listeners. I don't really know what you're going to get, so.
Oh, it's going to be a good one today, kids.
Wow, see some owls coming, Juliana.
Ooh, here they come.
Oh, boy, here come the owls. Oh, one of them, God, he's dropping everything. Okay.
As long as it's just letters.
Yeah, good thing he only has one letter for us. Okay, goodbye, friend. Okay, so the owl left me one letter. It's kind of disheveled, but that's okay. I can read what it says on it. So our letter is in response to our question from episode 20, which was, do we think Nagini is a pureblood? And if so, would that have impacted Voldemort's relationship with her? And we got a response from one of our active friends in the chat and on the Facebook group, Diskid said, I honestly thought that because of her strong connection to Voldemort that she was a half-blood. It's completely possible that I'm wrong, as she did end up being a horcrux to Voldemort, and as we see with Harry, that can give you a strong connection to him. However, it's been shown through the prophecy with him making Harry as his equal, that he felt a stronger connection to Harry than Neville even before he was an accidental Horcrux, specifically because Harry is a half-blood. It seems to be implied that Voldemort already felt a strong connection to Nagini before she was a Horcrux. After all, he chose her to be his companion out of all the other snakes he's ever talked to. I'm sure he's talked to a lot of snakes. So that led me to believe that she was a half-blood like him.
Huh.
I mean,
interesting.
I could be sort of, you know, my counter argument would be, I suppose any snake that was a human before they were a full snake is more interesting to talk to than a regular snake.
True. That's true. What do regular snakes have to say? Like, I had a mouse this morning. It was great. Oh man, the sun's pretty.
And who are you again?
Sounds accurate to me.
I'm not sure Nagini's blood status is really important for Voldemort, but it's interesting because in the episode they talked about if somebody with a blood curse can be considered pure blood, so that's something I didn't thought about, and I thought about that for werewolves because I think when a wizard became a werewolf, I don't think he is considered pure blood by other wizards. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I guess Maledictus it's a bit of the same, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to know, kind of along the science route of things, if being a Maledictus is something that you can only get if your genetics are just so, like in a way where you are a pure blood between two wizard parents, whereas if you had one muggle parent, that maybe that gene would not transfer to you because of that, because there has to be some genetic variation between people who can like sprout like sparks out of their hands and people who can't. There just has to be in all reality, but what reality are we living in anyway? Lord only knows. So I think it would be interesting from like a science-based perspective to see if in J.K. Rowling's mind, possibly, because that's really the only place that we could go for that weird bit of science, and I don't know if I want to go there right now. Sounds scary. And see if it's a trait that can only be transferred maybe when there is a half-blood relationship between the parents, or there is just a pureblood, or it's just someone is born of muggle parents.
I think the Maledictus curse is always passed through the mother to the from the mother to the daughter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's just connected to the woman passing it to her child. So
I think, considering, you know, we also have Squibs, which are sort of similar outcasts within the wizarding world, it, and obviously a maledictus isn't something that happens a lot, otherwise it would be much more wider known. It's sort of a, you know, a chance in like 10,000 probably that, you know,
a genetic hiccup.
Yeah.
Again, why I would like the science, please and thank you. Sorry, Diogenes here again. I would like the science. Oh, and it, so it looks like the owl just dragged itself right back up to me, and we have a second piece of mail. Thank you. Okay, you really can go now. Okay, goodbye.
You have to pay the owl.
Yeah, that's why it's going to keep dropping letters until you give it money.
It just looks disoriented at this point. I gave it two nuts, and it seems like
It's
doing the polka right now.
Did you get Errol? Did Ron send you Errol?
No,
I think that's what it
was.
Yeah, he's looking a little crusty. A little old and crusty. Poor little guy.
Did he dive into the cereal again?
Not quite. But I'm sure if I put out a bowl, he would dive right on in. Okay, so our second piece of mail comes from Jeff. And Jeff said, if Nagini was a pureblood, that wouldn't matter to Voldemort. When he speaks about the so-called purity of blood, he only seems to care about human witches and wizards. Once Nagini came to Voldemort, she was stuck as a snake forever and could not return to her human form. So whatever she was prior to that wouldn't make a difference to Voldemort, who only values others as far as they can benefit him. Voldemort therefore values Nagini because she is deadly to his enemies and provides him with certain services, such as the venom he takes from her for use in potions. Dumbledore says, Voldemort is, quote, as fond of her as he can be of anything, end quote. But that's still a pretty low bar, since Voldemort can't love. I think the idea of Nagini and Credence being hunted for sport is another example of wizards thinking they're superior to other creatures, especially pureblood wizards. They would assert their dominance while ridding the world of part humans that make them uncomfortable or threatened. Let's not forget that Sirius Black had a relative who wanted to pass a bill legalizing muggle hunting as well. I think that's a valid point.
You just gotta love pureblood wizards.
This whole thing is so much grosser when you can, now that you know that Nagini is a people in there.
I know.
Oh my god, like thinking about it's the
weird.
Fact that he's milking her,
it's weird.
Or that she's being milked during book four. Still she's
weird.
A person. That makes it so much grosser.
Yeah.
For some reason, I feel like Voldemort doesn't have too much shame in regards
no.
to doing things
oh,
like
no,
that.
Oh no, not at all. He doesn't care.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I have to do this. Okay. Watch me.
Wormtail, cut off your hand. I need it.
That's not a good Voldemort laugh, but that's okay. I tried. But that is all the mail that I was handed by Errol, so we let him go find a nice little place that he could nest in. He kind of like hobbled off, and I think he's hiding in my corner next to a pillow. So we'll let him sit there for a hot minute.
He deserves it.
Okay. So I guess then we will dive into our main discussion.
Ooh,
yes.
Yeah. Episode. I'm so excited.
Guys, we're almost at the end. This is the second to last segment we're going to
do. Oh my gosh. I have to start working on my newt cases again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know.
You better prepare. It's only one more episode without.
And what a segment
yes.
we have. That's the most intense 10 minutes of the entire movie, I'm sure of that.
Yeah,
it is
a lot
like
of action.
I kept watching it and I kept checking the timestamp. I was like, it's already been 10 minutes. I've already way overshot it, but it wasn't.
Yep. These
yep.
Are very, very action packed. Well, if you guys want to watch along at home, we're watching from 1 hour 50 and 1 second to exactly 2 hours. Or if you're reading in the screenplay, or, you know, doing both. The scenes in the script are starting from 114, starting with "They caught and tortured me," to 115 after "I've chosen my side." So exactly two scenes, because a lot is happening in
so
two scenes.
So much happening.
I know, I was expecting there to be a lot more, because I've done one other one of these, and we had, like, I don't know, like 20 scenes, because one of the scenes was like, a pan over Paris. End scene. I was like, okay. Great.
Yeah.
But these ones have a lot more content than that, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. So scene 114 starts interior underground
amphitheater.
Yes. Okay, that word. Night.
I just wanted to make a note at the top of this, just because I was looking at the script book as I was watching it too, and I forgot how beautiful the cover art is, and like the art that's on the inside too. I was like, oh my god, like this is like a piece of art.
Yeah, Mina like, Lima, wow. Genius.
Yeah, they're always bringing their A game.
Yeah, that's a one of our favorite things, the skull hookah, the thing that Anne would love to make from her DIY craft supplies. That
I mean,
she has.
This is like, I'm always into the Target Halloween decorations, and this is like top tier Target.
You pay like what, $20 for this instead of $10?
Oh, I yeah. Would. Yeah, this is their, yeah. I think their Hyde and Eek is their premium line of Halloween stuff. This is some high
yes.
quality stuff.
I agree. I agree. We should market this to the Target people, because you know I'm sure they're listening to all the Speak Beastie podcasts being like, where can I get merch ideas? This seems like a good spot. But, okay. Just noted pretty artwork.
Yeah, I mean, not to speak for you, Marjolaine, but Halloween is not really a thing here.
I feel like Anne likes Halloween.
Halloween's my favorite. So I am shook to my core.
Yes. Anyways, we start off with Grindelwald saying, they caught and tortured me in New York. They had stuck down their fellow wizards, witches and wizards for the simple crime of seeking truth for wanting freedom. And I'm a bit confused because I sort of get where he's going, but not really seeking truth for want. I mean... Or maybe I'm just overanalyzing this bit. Is it just me?
No, that's
no. They absolutely did not. They caught and tortured you because you killed a bunch of people.
Yeah, which
you
is
did
a crime.
You did a crime.
But they also caught and tortured him because he was starting a movement. So he's not that wrong, even if. Yeah, the seeking truth and wanting freedom. Wanting freedom is true, but seeking truth, yeah, that's... That depends on the point of view, I guess.
I mean, I can get the wanting freedom part, because obviously they're sort of living in hiding, but seeking truth? They already have the truth. They're magical. What else is there to the truth?
Yeah, the truth of the wizard... needing to be in power, I guess. I don't know. No, that's just him making his political statement. Mm-hmm. So.
And it's so frustrating to watch the scene because you know that individually every single person in that room is smarter than this. But when you put us together, we're a bunch of dumb herd animals, and Grindelwald is just playing everyone in the room like a violin. It's,
I mean, if 2020 showed me anything, is how stupid people are, so...
Exactly, because we're a bunch of dumb herd animals.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, you know, every time now I'm looking at a movie and be like, we wouldn't be stupid enough to not follow rules. I'm like, oh yeah, we would.
Yeah. I saw a Tumblr post that said, like, we should retire the phrase, avoid things like the plague, because guess what? People don't.
Yeah.
Juliana, it looks like you've got a point here about some wizard security.
I did. Oh, yes, I did.
That,
sorry.
That
I,
is a good
I didn't
quote.
Realize we got that. Yeah, my question, as I was watching it, I was like, okay, how is Jacob allowed in here and no one does or says anything? Which is in contrast to when the Aurors walk in and everyone's like, oh, high alert, high alert, high alert. They know. But I feel as though Jacob should set off more of a high alert for them, than, especially since Grindelwald is kind of talking about muggles in his speech.
Yeah, but Jacob is not really a threat. And I think most important that he is with the people that Grindelwald trapped here. So he's part of the manipulation too that turns Queenie to his side. So I think he knows who he is. And he knows too that Queenie needs also a reminder that why she will turn to him is for love, for Jacob. So that's part of the manipulation, I think.
As I think they mostly recognize the auras because Theseus is sort of, I mean, he's a war hero.
Yeah,
so
he's
well-known. Yeah, and I'm sure Grindelwald's like followers just know who the auras are. Whereas probably the majority in the crowd, if you'd ask him, who's that guy, and point at Jacob, they'd be like, I don't know, just some random dude. So like he has a sign somewhere saying that he's non-magical. And he came in with the rest of the people, so I suppose they don't care. And as Marjolin already said, I don't think Grindelwald sees him as a threat and is more happy to use him for his purpose.
That's a valid point.
Also, it's you know, when you go into the ministry, you have to have your wand checked and swayed. But here, they're not doing any sort of security checks because they probably don't think that a muggle could find their way in. Because in order to get the invitation to the rally in the first place, you had to be a wizard because the muggles on the streets of Paris could not see the black banners with the raven on them. So they have no reason to believe that any muggles would even be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense to me.
Also, security and wizards.
Okay. And yeah, so the next thing this is just me personally. Johnny Depp was giving me like strong Jack Sparrow vibes, where he like walks around and like flings his arms everywhere. He's like half drunk, kind of. I feel like I was watching like a low key, like a dialed down version of that. Which I mean, yes, he's the same actor, and that makes sense. But I don't know if he's the right person for the role.
Quick question, though. Are you getting Jack Sparrow vibes, or are you getting Johnny Depp plays yet another pale weirdo vibes?
Probably the second one.
Because that's kind of his thing lately.
Yeah.
Actually, I disagree with you, because that's what I was afraid when they cast him to play Grindelwald. I thought he would be too over the top and with too many mannerism, but I think he plays Grindelwald very different from this type of character. He's very calm. He doesn't make any he plan every moves. So the way that he plays it, I like it, even if the look is, yes, a bit too pale, a bit too weird maybe for what I picture for Grindelwald, but in his acting, I think I like the way he act for Grindelwald.
Yeah, I mean, I've said my piece on this before, but I don't like him as a choice for Grindelwald. And I might obviously come from, you know, half of my history classes in school were watching Hitler and analyzing him to death. So I see why people followed him. I can see why he sort of was likable and all of that. I look at Grindelwald the way we now see him portrayed by Depp, and I'm like, yeah, that dude is creepy. I wouldn't do shit for him. I wouldn't trust any word out of his mouth. I don't see why anyone would follow him for anything. However, I would have seen Graves to be that person. Like, if he was Graves still, so Colin Farrell that mannerism, I could see it 1,000%. The Johnny Depp Grindelwald, whatever he's doing, I don't see it, honestly.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I think Colin Farrell, honestly, probably, in my opinion, would have made a much more trusting Grindelwald, too, so
I will say that in this was the only scene where I actually did see Grindelwald's attraction as a leader, because his acting in the scene is very magnetic and charismatic. The way he speaks, the cadence of his speech is all very precisely calculated to be as kind of insinuating, I guess, into your brain as possible. I agree with you, Oreo. I think that he's a big old creep and he's not trustworthy, and everything he's saying is obviously, you know, 100% manipulation and lies, but it sounds nice.
Yeah, and we see the power of his manipulation with what's happening between the horrors and the red-haired witch, like she's called in the script. And yeah, we see how every word that that he is saying is targeted to this specific young lady that is so angry that she will spark the thing, and this horror that is so on edge that he will do something terrible. So, and everything is manipulated by every word of Grindelwald. So I think the way that this scene is put together is very effective, I think. So mm-hmm. yeah, but it's a bit different in the script because they say that they make eye contact, and I don't think the horror look at the red-haired witch in the movie. He just reacts to her movement. So, and quick note, because we will, and it was just few months ago that I realized that we see this horror later in the scene, joining Grindelwald, and it took me 2 years to see that. So, yeah. So I guess it implies that maybe this horror was there to start the to do this killing, and to be the reason why Grindelwald is winning the crowd. So, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I had put that in the doc too somewhere down. Where I'm like, he either, if it is a coincidence and it happens, he literally makes the most out of the situation. Or what I think is more likely, that it is all orchestrated and he wanted that to happen, because that really hammers his point home, where it's like, it's not us who's doing the killing.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he literally needed that. So I'm sort of more on the side of he wanted that, and that's all, you know, a theater play, essentially.
Yeah, I'm sure that Grindelwald wanted that to happen, but I would prefer that the horror wasn't on Grindelwald's side, and that would be just something that happened with police forces. So, yeah, I would prefer that be only the result of Grindelwald's manipulation and not the horror be on Grindelwald's side all along.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, my counterpoint is obviously Grindelwald was part of Mercusa undercover for at least a while, very successfully. We know that in later points, Voldemort has spies in the Ministry. And, you know, I would definitely understand that Grindelwald has spies everywhere where he can have them, and followers and people who think he's actually right and are turning to his side. And, you know, if Voldemort can have spies, Voldemort didn't offer shit. What did Voldemort offer? Literally, matching tattoos and a snake that ate you if you didn't follow his orders. Grindelwald actually offers those people something that they think they really need.
Yeah,
so I can see it.
I don't know, though. I don't like it, because I feel like it harkens back to the very end of the first Fantastic Beasts movie, when we find out that, oh, it wasn't an American who succumbed to corruption and was falling to fascism after all. It was a nasty outsider who was coming in and infiltrating things. And once again, we are having a nasty outsider coming in and infiltrating the perfectly pure Aurors otherwise, instead of the corruption and rot coming from the inside. Well, I'm not. You see my other note. But I don't know. I don't like it. I'm agreeing with Marjo here that I wish that it had been, it wasn't a plant, because that would feel, it would make it feel more natural, I guess. I don't know what the words I'm looking for are here, but just less that everything has to be caused by an outsider, and more that things, rot can come from within.
Yeah, and I think the whole mausoleum scene is there to show us the power of Grindelwald's manipulation, because we only hear that. I mean, the movie start with this prison scene, when we know that every guardian is he succeeded to turn every guardian on his side, so that's the reason why they got his tongue. And now we see the power of this tongue, that he can totally manipulate the crowd, like he and yeah, so I think that's the power of this scene. So yeah, I don't know, but I prefer to believe that this aura wasn't on Grindelwald's side when he moved inside the mausoleum, even if he moved out on his side. So
yeah, because in the script it says that later on, it's when he uses the Protego Diabolica. It says that half a dozen Aurors lose their heads and join Grindelwald. But that does not happen. Most of the Aurors are running away, and it's just this guy who joins the crowd.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I saw anyone else who either didn't get like engulfed by the flames or try and run away besides this one dude.
This one dude is worth half a dozen Aurors. There you have it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I get where you're coming from. I can also sort of, like, I'm not made up in my, you know, position, but I can sort of see that it could also be orchestrated.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I see both, but I prefer the first version.
Yeah, that brings me to my next point. Grindelwald, in his speech, says your anger, your desire for revenge is natural. But revenge against who? Revenge against the Muggles? What did the Muggles do to them? They don't even know they exist.
Yeah, no, I think in this context, he was talking about the wizarding authorities that tortured him and killed his followers. So I think in this context, the anger is against the wizarding authorities that are represented by the Aurors. So, because the Aurors are treating his followers so badly that, yeah.
Okay. Also,
I think
oh, go ahead, Julian. It sounded like you had something.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I think in my head, too, it kind of speaks to what Queenie is going after, where, again, it's directed towards the wizarding government creating laws where you can't marry Muggles, you can't really tell them anything that's going on. And I have a feeling that because that's the storyline we see in the movie too, that is part of what he's playing into. Not the whole story, but definitely something that he plays into. But I definitely feel too that it's not directed at Muggles, it's directed at the wizarding government creating rules around Muggles.
I think
I'm going to be splitting the difference. I feel like it's revenge against Muggles because it's them who are the ones who are quote unquote forcing you to live in the shadows and forcing you to quell your potential. So a big part of fascism is targeting an other. So I'm sure, you know, us in America are very familiar with that kind of rhetoric. And so we're seeing that at play here because Grindelwald is creating a social hierarchy with wizards at the top and Muggles at the bottom. And so he's telling his followers, you don't understand why the Muggles at the top and you're at the bottom when the other way, it should be the other way around, right? So of course you want to kill them. Of course you're mad.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
So if it's scary how relevant this is to,
yep.
to today's
party. Yeah.
Oh, Christ almighty.
Yeah. So he continues saying, take this young warrior back to her family. And we've sort of discussed part of what I'm saying here is if this was all planned. I think, Anne, you had another point to this.
The script says he's playing on her instability. Hang on, let me see if I can find the exact quote. Because it's just like everything Grindelwald does. It's gross and creepy.
Yeah.
Where's my Kindle app? There it is. But while I'm looking, I believe he absolutely 100% wanted somebody to die because this movement needs a martyr. And I would not be surprised if in the third movie and later on, we see her face on posters and she is the one who was the first to die for our glorious cause. And it's super gross. Hang on. Here we go. Yeah, in the screenplay it says he is deliberately playing on the unstable, young red-haired witch's feelings. He's doing this on purpose, and calling her a young warrior is also super gross, and I hate it a bunch.
Yeah.
Agree.
It's so creepy. Yep. All of this, I mean, not to get political.
Oh, please, Oreo. I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I mean, I do it all the time. So I'm like, this is probably everyone who's listening who's like, oh, what you're saying, you always get political. But, you know, the whole weird way Grindelwald looks and stuff, I'm sort of wondering more and more every time I see it if it's even more a play on Trump than it is actually on Hitler.
I don't think so. That's not at all the same kind of evil. Trump is just a dumb evil, and Grindy is far more smart than Trump, I think.
Yeah, Grindelwald has like 5 brains for every 1 brain cell that Trump has, and Trump has like -5 brain cells.
Wait, did you say he has 5 brains for?
Yeah, full brains. Full brains, because Trump doesn't have brains.
That's why he keeps Rosier around, so she can put these extra brains in her big hat.
Yeah, they swatch them out. One goes in the hookah, one goes in like a nice big old glass of formaldehyde. That's why he has so many accolades, too. They're robots that are hosing his brains.
I get where you're coming from saying Trump is stupid, but I mean, I could also list you all the evil stuff Trump has done. So,
oh, yeah,
I mean,
that's why I said evil, stupid evil. That's, yeah, he does a lot of harm. And smart evil don't always do more evil than the stupid one, so... That's not making one less dangerous than the other. That's just the way that they are doing evil things. That's different style, I guess. But yeah. No, I totally agree that they are both very dangerous and they are both making a lot of mess and making a lot of people die. So, yay!
Yeah, I'm going to say, if we're using like D&D alignments to get into a different section of nerdery real quick, Trump is more chaotic evil, and Grindelwald is, I wouldn't exactly call him lawful evil, but he definitely has a very strict moral code that he plays by, even if nobody else plays by it, and even if it's not a law in the strict sense of what the Aurors would be upholding.
Yeah, agree.
Anyway, okay. Let's get out of that and talk about a Niffler.
Yeah, because it's in this scene that we see Pastry is going through the feet of Grindelwald, and I always find this scene a bit weird, because if something like that was pushing under my feet, I would probably react, and Grindy didn't seem to feel that a Niffler is literally pushing his feet. So
yeah, and I mean you can see his foot moving quite a lot. It's not like the Niffler is not exactly
discreet.
It's not the baby Niffler, it's not little.
No, it's big, and it's really bumping against his leg multiple times, where I'm like, well, you wouldn't exactly win a spy award for anything, because honestly,
it's too busy being roly-poly.
But yeah, Marjolaine, I think you're right. Why does Grindelwald not like take a look what's happening? Why isn't he not like, okay, someone is repeatedly bumping against my leg. It's going to be fine. If I only turned my back to like 100 people with wands who may or may not kill me. Like...
Well, I wonder.
I would be more freaked out if I were him.
I wonder if he did notice, but just didn't act on it because he wanted to make it clear, I'm so bereaved by this death that 100% didn't have to happen, that I just can't be bothered with anything else in the world right now. But if that is
considering what the Niflis is stealing.
If that's the case, we need some kind of indication that he's faking not noticing. Like, even if it's just like a little twitch of his foot or something, but... The fact that we don't get any kind of indication that he is noticing it does make me think, no, they don't get that benefit of that doubt.
Now I'm picturing this, the what would have, like, on set, they would have Johnny Depp and a stick under his under his feet, poking him, and just the concept would be, just don't move. We will move your feet. Just don't move.
That would be... Yeah, I've thought about that too just now, and I'm wondering, do you think it's actually his real leg, or is that by that point also not a real lack anymore because they have to have the Niffler move.
I don't know. Usually they definitely use plushes or something on set to indicate where the beast will be. So I was picturing that, but you're right. Maybe it was all fake. I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know enough about movies to qualify myself talking about movies. Hey! So Grindelwald then says, disapparate, leave, go forth from this place and spread the word. It is not we who are violent. Ugh. And I think that is the one point where I'm like, now I get why people sort of can... Everything he says before that, I'm just like, you're creepy. That's the first line where he gets to me.
Yeah.
And also, just wanted to point out, would the Aurors have listened to Dumbledore and not, you know, forcefully interact with Grindelwald? There may not have been this situation, because Dumbledore definitely foresaw that Grindelwald may use a situation like this for his benefit.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and Theseus even says to them, I just flip back to scene 113. He says, it isn't illegal to listen to him. Use a minimum of force on the crowd. We mustn't be what he says we are.
Yeah.
And then they do.
It never works with police forces, I must say.
Nope.
Violence is not the answer.
That was your other political statement. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm running through them quickly today. Well, also, I want to say that is even considered a political statement these days is probably wrong in the first place. But hey, you know.
That's 2020.
Welcome, friends.
So everyone leaves.
Yep, they just...
Yeah. That's a bit weird. Oh,
I spelled apparate wrong. Oh, well.
Yeah, I literally read this line 5 times. I was like... I think she means apparate, but I'm not apostate? Really sure. And
I don't even know what apostate means.
I looked for apostate because it's a real word, but
it is.
I'm not sure what it means. And I looked it up and maybe he's a very elaborated thing to say in this context, but I was
a
not
person
sure.
Who renounces a religious or political belief or principle.
Yeah.
Abandoning a religious or political belief or principle. I mean, I feel like they're more or less unapostating because they're accepting this whatever thing.
They're apostating not being wizard fascists.
Aha! I hope. But I just thought it was interesting how they just all simultaneously just leave silently. No one, like, runs from the hall being like, ah!
Why would you run if you can apparate, though?
Yeah, but I would still expect some kind of hollering. Like...
Yeah, people would be like, woohoo! Yay!
If one of my friends was murdered in front of me by a cop, I'm not just gonna be like, oh, okay, we'll just take your body and go bye. Like... There's going to be a minimum of fuss in here.
Yeah,
that's what I didn't get.
I think she came alone, but because we saw her alone
if he gets
in the street
next to me.
Yeah.
The screenplay says
I'm still gonna freak out.
To the horror of her companions, she falls dead.
Yeah.
So she's got buddies there with her.
Yeah, they were quiet horror.
Maybe that's just a French thing, Marjolaine.
I'm not sure.
I was going to say, would you be super chill about that? Would you be like, okay, we'll go.
No,
goodbye.
Definitely not. We are not known for our chill nature, so yeah. Especially in Paris, so yeah. No. Anyway.
Well, we see Theseus, who's looking at Grindelwald. Say, let's take him.
Oh, my boy, you know, I love him.
That is going to be easy. considering they were looking for Grindelwald for years before they captured him in New York. But yeah, you know, let's just do it. He's going to come quietly.
It'll be totally fine. This is totally super chill and great.
Yeah. And then Grindelwald reacts with whatever that is, Protego Diabolica. Which I'm just like, are we just making up stuff now?
I mean, yes.
Like, what is that even supposed to be?
Yeah, like, This is Fiendfire, isn't it? Because like there's the dragons at the end and the destroying stuff, right? Fiendfire?
Well, that's later though. And the Fiendfire we see the other time is red and not white.
Yeah. No, I don't think
it is Fiendfire.
And also the Fiendfire destroys everything and this flame are choosing what it destroys.
That's true. It only destroys
people who didn't pledge allegiance to Grindelwald. And the people who are not sure, like Kroll. So, yeah. I see it like a creation from Grindelwald. That's his own creation spell, I guess. But yeah, it's unspoken in the movie and the name is, yeah, not good. Protect Diabolica is not good. So I understand why they made it unspoken in the movie. But yeah. And quick note, it was supposed to be black fire and they turned it into blue fire because I think it's more cinematic. So
yeah, I would say it's more interesting to look at.
It's also, I think, easier to create than black fire.
Yeah, because
what would black fire even look like?
I don't want to spoil anything for The Mandalorian, but...
Go for it. I don't watch Star Wars.
Okay, well, I don't want to spoil it for people who are listening that maybe haven't seen season one of The Mandalorian. But regardless, there is... I'll just say this much. There is a Darksaber that shows up towards the end of season one of The Mandalorian, and it looks cheap because it just looks like they literally just drew a square of blackness and stuck it on the end of the hilt. So I feel like it's hard to make black light look cool.
Yeah.
Because black light is almost, you know, not possible.
Right.
Because black isn't supposed to be a light. so I can understand why they turned it to blue fire. Well, we see the first followers at the screenplay says Abernathy Carroll, which also Carroll, Kraft Macduff, I want to say Nagel because that's how I'd say it in German, but probably Nagel, I don't know, and Rosio walk through the flames into the circle. Then angle on Kroll, hesitating. Then he decides the circle is the better option, braces himself, runs into the fire, and is consumed.
Ooh.
Grindelwald doesn't act at all. Like, he's just like, oh yeah, well that happened. Doesn't seem to care at all that Kroll just died. So we can assume that Kroll has no value to him, or no value anymore to him.
Whatever
function he may have had before.
Yeah, I think at this point he just doesn't need anyone who isn't just slamming back the Flavor Aid. You know, so if you are hesitating at all, you're out of here. He's got enough followers that he can pick and choose. Yeah.
And he gained so much more followers in this one night that losing one hesitant is nothing. And Kroll has the... He dared to say that he admires Dumbledore, so that's not good.
Dumbledore got style. Wrong quote.
Kingsley, but, you know. No!
It's not even Kingsley. It's supposed to be, what's the name? The Slytherin headmaster?
Snape?
No. The black.
I was very concerned for a second there. I was like, you don't know the name of Snape.
Crap, what's his name? Phineas Nigellus.
Yeah. I was so somewhere stuck on Nigel and I was like, it's not Nigel but similar. Yeah. He's the one who says it in the books. It's only in the movie that Kingsley says it. But anyways. Grindelwald is creepy and says, "Play by the rules, no cheating, children," which is like condescending much.
Yeah, he's enjoying himself so much with this fire. And I wonder if about this fire, is it the fire that recognize the true allegiance, or is it Grindelwald who choose who can pass and who is consumed?
I want to say it's Grindelwald, because that would be... How would that even work? The fire would have had to have some form of conscience.
I mean, it's like an age line, isn't it? Because an age line can determine who is and isn't 17, and it doesn't have any sentience.
Yeah, but that is age. It's not do you believe me or do you not believe
that's
me?
That's true.
How, I mean, that's much more gray.
But if the name is Protego Diabolica, it would mean that it would protect himself from evil.
The evil, yeah.
Against him. So maybe he put in the spell the... Yeah,
anyone who wants to harm him doesn't survive, I suppose. I would then still say, how would the spell know what the intentions of the person are? But
it's magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we can pretty safely say a wizard did it at some points here.
I mean, that's always the magical word. So you can say it's magic, so it's going to work.
I kind of think it might be... I'm not sure because I'm thinking about Queenie because when Rosier walks through the fire, she's just like, whatever, I'm in. It's good. Like, it's no hesitation. It doesn't hurt her. And it doesn't seem like it hurts anyone else. But when Queenie walks through the fire, she's screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she is screaming because she and Jacob are separating. Mm-hmm. And that is hurting her.
She screamed before.
I was reading that the fire was hurting her because she didn't really seem to have any hesitation about leaving Jacob. She was just
she's literally screaming at him, turning around, stepping in the fire, turning back to look at Jacob. I have never thought for a second that that was the fire that was hurting her, but now I'm like, maybe
I need to rewatch because it looked when she turned away from Jacob, I don't think she turned back. Maybe I'm misremembering.
No, she doesn't. And clearly, we will talk about Queenie later, but the first time I saw her go through the flames and saw her screaming and Jacob having this movement of horror, and I was exactly like Jacob. I was certain that Queenie will die in the flame because I couldn't believe that she would have the purest intention to join Grindelwald and that the flame will just consume her. So I was certain that she would die and I was in shock, but she moved past it. But definitely we see her screaming in the flame because she was in pain. So I don't know what it means, but yeah.
That almost makes me think that it is Grindelwald controlling it because he knew that his followers would come through it. So he probably, I'm going to do some science talk here. I'm not a scientist. He encoded their biosignatures or something into the spell so that they would be able to pass through without harm. But then Queenie's unexpected. He doesn't know about her. So he may not have time to completely protect her walking through.
He met her, and I think he knows that she's legitimate.
She's come
and
with
he wants her
Grindelwald
on his side. So,
Queenie is there because she came with Grindelwald.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still sort of torn if he controls the magic as and when people are stepping through, or if the magic is doing it all on its own. I don't know. I've sat here and I've seen Marjolaine's comment to Michael that I thought that our heroes don't look scared enough to match the situation that they landed themselves in, because I think they look relatively calm considering what's happening around them. But apparently Marjolaine disagrees, so...
I think that they just try to find a way to stop him. But they are there to stop Grindelwald, so they are supposed to try to stop him. But this spell is beyond them. But I wasn't expecting something else from them. But I don't know.
I mean, obviously running away is not an option anyways, but it doesn't, at that point in time, it doesn't look like it's a situation that they're going to survive.
But what would you expect for them to do?
are we expecting Newt to dive under the bench and be like, Mama!
I mean, I suppose I'm mostly considering Jacob, who is standing in a situation he's not at all equipped
that is
to
true.
Handle.
Yeah.
Shit Jacob is happening around him.
Jacob is in
everyone,
shock.
Yeah.
He's just in shock and he can't think about something else than Queenie. So, he's...
Okay. Now I sort of get it. I mean, Theseus, obviously, as the Auror, wouldn't panic or anything. He better not, otherwise he's very wrong in his position. But we're seeing Credence walking towards the fire, and Nagini tries to stop him and says he knows what you were born, not who you are, which is obviously a different way of it's our choices, Harry, that make who we really are. I'm a bit torn again, because I can understand why Credence wants to find out, but what, like, I mean, you're curious, you want to know, but also at what cost, and what does he really think is that's going to change about him as a person?
I think Credence desperately wants to matter. He wants to be significant to someone, and instead I feel like he's not satisfied with just being Credence Barebone. He has to feel like that everything he's gone through has to mean something. It has to be leading up to some grand game, like some grand part in the game. So yeah. Like he can't be satisfied with just being Nagini's best friend. He can't be satisfied with just being the Obscurus who lived past age 15. He's got to be more than that.
Yeah, and he grew up as an orphan and without knowing anything about where he comes from. And he knows that something is different in him. So yeah, he definitely has an identity crisis since he is a child. And that's such a strong manipulation tool for Grindelwald. So yeah, I totally agree with Nagini. She is absolutely right. And I love this quote, but Credence can't hear that. And yeah, I agree with you, Anne.
This is the way she delivers this line. She is just putting every ounce of love into this. She's like, no, you matter to me, you are enough for me, like, you don't have to do this. But he doesn't listen. He's like, okay, bye.
Yeah,
love you too, bye.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Peace. also obviously they've met Grindelwald before, and Grindelwald's already said, you know, I know what you need, what you want to know. You just need to come to this event, mm-hmm. and then you learn everything, which is, you know, so far he hasn't learned anything other than that Grindelwald is prepared to fight. So yeah, I get it, but I suppose also he needs to do it anyways, because otherwise why would we have more movies? Why, he's sort of the driver of the plot, isn't he?
Credence is like, no, you're right, Nagini. I'm good. And then just a movie by David Heyman. That's it. That's the last movie.
Yeah, because the whole reason everyone's in Paris is Credence is in Paris. So, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how controversial that is, but, you know, Nagini obviously here deciding against Evil Wizard. And obviously later we know she ends up with being essentially Voldemort's pet snake. Obviously we don't know how much choice and willpower she still has when she is a snake permanently. And, you know, how much Voldemort has potentially put her under his spell. But obviously here she has a moral compass to not follow the evil wizard.
I mean, we also have to consider the timelines here, as much as anyone can consider timelines in any of these movies, considering that it's all made up and the points don't matter, just like whose line is it anyway? Like, she's probably, if we presume that she's in her, like, early 20s at this point, by the time she meets Voldemort, she's in her 80s. And Juliana, maybe you can speak to this better.
I
was going to say, Juliana, maybe you can speak to this better than I can, because, like, I work with retirees, so yeah, and as a result, I work with a lot of adult kids who have to have power of attorney for their moms and dads because mom has mm-hmm. dementia, dad has Alzheimer's. Yep. So Nagini's mental state by the time she meets Voldemort is probably pretty questionable.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, because most of my residents in my nursing home that I work in have some kind of invoked healthcare proxy or invoked power of attorney who makes their decisions for them. And even the ones who are still their own person, because you have to pass a certain exam and a doctor's screening to be still deemed as your own person, they're still not 100% their own person. They still make some questionable decisions, hence kind of why they're in a nursing home setting anyway. But it's hard. I don't think there aren't really many 80-year-olds that I've known in the 5 years that I've worked in nursing homes who are fully mentally there.
So. Yeah, I mean, my counterpoint is wizards get a lot older than us muggles.
That is true.
That's true.
And what about snake?
But,
how old can the snake be? I don't know, this kind of snake, if they live that long, or I have no idea.
That's a good question. Let's Google it.
What type of snake is it?
I feel like I've read somewhere that she's a Burmese python, but I might just be making that up.
No,
like
that's right, correct. But... That's correct.
So I find an article saying that they are really impressed by a 62 years old python, because usually a python lives only about 30 or 40 years. So
yeah.
But
so she's mentally insane as a python and a human then.
Yeah.
So the oldest Burmese python, that's not the oldest, but it looks like the oldest one I can find in the Wikipedia article is 27.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I have a 62 one. 62 okay. years old one. So, yeah.
I like how Marjolaine's like, I have a 62 one, I win.
Marjolaine's like, my pet Burmese python is 62.
Therefore, she's much older than me.
And I love her and I pet her every day.
She was handed down as a family.
Oh, good lord.
She's a very cool Marjolaine, old lady.
You're not 62. Yeah. So, we go to Queenie, and I know we've covered it a bit. So Queenie's point is, Jacob, he's the answer. He wants what we want, which...
No! The scene is heartbreaking. Like, the first time I was watching it through last night, and, like, when there's, like, he's going, no, don't go, no, 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 and she's screaming, walk with me. Like, I got verklempt. Oh, my God. Like, it's so heartbreaking. They love each other so much, and they're both being, well, I can't say they're both being so dumb. One of them is being dumb. It isn't Jacob, but it is just, oh, my God, it's so hard to watch.
Yeah, it breaks me every time. I think I lost count how many times I saw this scene, and I don't think there is one time I didn't cry, because it's so, I don't know why, but the emotional impact of this scene is, it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's similar to what they did in Order of the Phoenix, and apologies for bringing up Harry Potter so much, where they had to mute Dan's scream after Sirius died, because it was too heartbreaking.
Uh-huh.
But then almost seeing the whole silent version of it, and again in this one, like, we see her screaming but we don't hear her screaming, I think just so the disconnection almost makes it almost worse to watch.
No, I think it's the scream walks with me that
that's hard.
it's the worst, but I now that I know that she don't dies in the flame, that's better. But the first time I think I had a panic attack in this scene. I wasn't good. I think I think it was Mary who was just next to me, and she was a bit concerned.
Oh.
Yeah, poor Queenie, poor Jacob.
Yeah, I'm sort of concerned if that's gonna have a happy end.
Oh, it's absolutely not. 100%.
Yeah.
That's sorted then. Well, Credence makes it to Grindelwald, and the screenplay says Grindelwald embraces him like a prodigal son. Creep.
Like, it just you know what it reminded me of? Is, first of all, it made me think, if Credence is like, oh, this is like being hugged by Graves, but I liked it better when you were Colin Farrell.
Yes.
It also made me think that in Deathly Hallows Part 2, when Voldemort does the creepy, weird, I'm your best Uncle Tom hug with Draco. And, oh, God, it's so, why are bad guys so bad at hugging?
Yeah.
Because they never do it.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that in the script it says specifically prodigal son, because I think there is a lot of... vocabulary concerning Grindelwald, what Credence, that are implying a father-son relationship, and that makes me think of a theory about Credence, that he might be the result of an alchemical experiment where Geralt and Albus may be the fathers. So, yeah.
That wow, just makes me think I've about never that. Heard that theory.
But I don't know if it's just an expression.
That theory is wild.
I love that theory.
No, I like it. I've just never heard it before. It's crazy. I like it, though.
Yeah, it's the homunculus thing, the fact that there is alchemical experiment that are renowned to try to create a human being. And that's something that is known in alchemy. So, yeah, that's one of the theory that Geralt and Albus tried to create a human, and maybe this human is, yeah, will become Credence. So
that is so creepy.
But yeah, that's just one of the many creepy theory about who
I've
is Credence. I
just learned about this theory like a minute ago, and I'm already not sure if I had to know about it. But you know. Grindelwald then says, "This has all been for you, Credence." I'm still not 100% sure what exactly he thinks was for Credence. This whole meeting and, I don't really see it.
So I'm not sure of the timeline of Grindelwald's plan, but I think he learned that Credence is, he's trying to find his family, because he finds his adoption paper and it leads him to Paris. So he moved to Paris and he learned that the rumors is that Credence is covetously strange. So it started his plan of leading everyone to the Lestrange mausoleum, because he knows that this rumor will come to Credence. So I'm not sure of the detail of his reasoning, but I think, yeah, he set up this whole thing in this specific place for Credence because of these rumors, but I don't know exactly
Vinda and Abernathy moved the records from the French ministry to the Lestrange tomb because they needed Leta specifically to be able to debunk that Credence was not Corvus, like there at the tomb. That way, Credence is heartbroken. He's devastated because he thought he had lead. He finally knew who he was. And then it's ripped away from him. Oh, look, there's a rally happening downstairs with this dude who says that he can tell me who I really am. Maybe I'll just pop down there.
I mean, it's just, I get all of that. I think what sort of throws me is that Grindelwald meets Credence before that on the roof, because, you know, roofs, and tells him, Come to this location, I'll tell you everything you want to know, sort of thing. I can tell you everything. Then Credence shows up and nothing that has happened so far is telling Credence anything about himself.
Yeah, because it was a false hope to make him think that he was really strange. And so he broke her spirit again to make him weaker, to make him join him. So, yeah. But I don't know if that's a reasonable plan, but that's the type of plan that Grindelwald seems to like. Yeah. He likes to play his toys.
Yeah. I was just going to say, there's a lot of mental chess playing and playing with people's feelings.
Yeah.
I just realized, I think we butchered the dock earlier moving stuff around. Because now we're back to Queenie, and I think wasn't supposed to be in that order. sorry. I had another point to Queenie, which came from the screenplay. Because in the screenplay, it says she reads his mind, turns, hesitates, then walks into the black fire. So, in like according to what it says on the screenplay, it's the thoughts that she reads in Jacob's mind that make her continue without him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I I read it a little bit differently, I guess. The way I read it was that she reads his mind, and that is what almost makes her stay with him. But then she decides that following the guy who says you can marry a muggle is way more important than, you know, being with the muggle you want to marry. She reads his mind, turns, hesitates, then walks into the Blackfyre. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can see it both ways. Like, I guess my initial was always just reading it from the screenplay that she hesitated because she was like, oh, I don't know. Should I, do I stay with Jacob? Do I go now? I should go. Whereas in the movie, it's very much played as she reads his mind and then is like, okay, peace.
Yeah, I think I still read it that way because it's she reads his mind, turns, then hesitates, and then mm-hmm. continues to walk.
Yeah.
That, like, she already turned after reading his mind and then hesitates.
But yeah. Yeah.
See, I question what she even reads in his brain. Well, like, what is she seeing that is sufficient?
And maybe it's almost Jacob being, well, she drugged me earlier to be with her together. Now she's willing to follow this creep. Maybe it's just him having doubts in general. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's her being like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, if he's not in for it.
He is saying out loud this time that she's crazy. Mm-hmm. And maybe...
Yeah.
She's checking his mind to see if he really means that this time. And maybe he really means that because at this time he can only think that because she's acting totally crazy. So yeah, that's maybe what because yeah, I don't know if in her mental state she can see that he's more that he has love in his thought more than fear from her.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that she is not she's not herself. She acts so strangely. We already said that, but she seems so confused and not clear. She clearly has not her normal. She's not her normal self. So that's. I don't think she can see clearly in his mind at this point. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, something I noted here. Tina's lack of reaction.
Yeah, that's...
Like, she only, like, screams Queenie after it's, like, done and too late.
Yeah. We don't even... We don't even see Tina. Background. Yeah. And she didn't react at all at Credence joining Grindelwald. And Credence was the only reason why she went to Paris. In the first place.
Mm-hmm.
The movie just forgot her in this scene. And yeah, no, that's... It's a shame.
Yeah, because, you know, from the first movie, we get the narrative that the sisters are sort of close. And now I'm almost assuming they maybe are not anymore. Because maybe Tina has disagreed with Queenie for a while. And they've obviously not been together for a while either. Because mm-hmm. Tina has already been in Paris. But yeah. Then we get Grindelwald saying, Mr. Scamander, do you think Dumbledore will mourn for you? And, you know, obviously the two brothers are right next to each other, so who is he talking to? Or is he deliberately talking to both?
Like Lita. Yeah, my first thought is Newt, because it echoes the what makes Dumbledore so fond of you in movie one, but... Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there, because I don't think we know that Theseus has any special connection to Dumbledore, besides, like, their time working together as, like, going to Hogwarts. But Newt, he knows, does have a special connection with Dumbledore.
Yeah, and I think it will be a running thing through the movie that Grindelwald is a bit jealous of Newt's relationship with Dumbledore. So
he was my boyfriend first.
Well, we then see Lita and Grindelwald's comments here. I and maybe I'm reaching because I'm desperate for clues, but I thought it was very, very sort of interesting what he says here. He starts with, "This one I believe I know," and then says, "Leta Lestrange, despised entirely amongst wizards, unloved, mistreated, yet brave, so very brave." And then directly to Leta, he says, "Time to come home." What are your thoughts?
I interpreted his meaning, it could be interpreted a couple of ways. Either she joins him and becomes part of his family, goes quote-unquote home to Nurmengard, and they all have a great time killing muggles or whatever. Or if she chooses not to join him, then she dies in her family crypt, and so she is amongst her family and home. Also, real quick, how can you say she's entirely despised amongst wizards when Theseus is right there and he loves her? So how dare you? You are very rude.
Yeah, and unloved when Theseus and Newt are just next to her.
Right there.
There's a love triangle. Read the room. Anyway. I see both of your points, which is like time to come home as in you go die. Or he wants to have her join him. Which I suppose, you know, seeing where the Lestrange family goes to later, and even where the Lestrange family is at this point, definitely more sort of leaning to the evil side anyways. So it makes sense. Again, I was reaching, I suppose. I just want more clues. Is Leta dead or is she alive?
Well, I mean, dead. We all know my thoughts here. Anyway, Juliana, you've got a point here about Leta.
So I wrote that the fire engulfs Leta, engulfs, quote unquote, per the script. And I feel like that's an interesting choice of verbiage, because I don't feel like it fully like engulfs her. When I think of like engulfing, I think of kind of like a Jonah and the whale situation where it's like, oh, and just like eats you in one big gulp. But I feel like that wasn't really the case.
Yeah, also,
here,
we don't see her entirely engulfed, so hashtag Leta lives.
We see her totally consumed.
No, we don't. No, we don't.
Yeah. Leta's dead.
No, she's not. She lives.
Zoe Kravitz says she died.
Yeah.
Zoe's wrong. That's fine. She could be wrong.
Or maybe the reason why they are filming The Batman at the exact same time as Fantastic Beasts is to keep it a secret, because they are so close to each other that she can move from the Batman set to Fantastic Beasts without anyone knowing.
Oh,
so that would be the best secret kept. And that's just me trying to help you, because I'm sure that she died, but...
No, okay, I'm just going to bring up, I think it was...
In times where we have COVID bubbles, I don't think you can.
That's true.
I think it was Sophie, maybe in the common room, who said ages ago that the way she wants the third Fantastic Beasts movie to end is we cut to, like, a dungeon in the bottom of Nurmengard, and Leta's there, and mad as hell, but alive. So that's what they're filming Batman now, so that she can, like, because they only need her for the last scene of Fantastic Beasts 3. It's fine, because she's still alive.
Yeah. Well, we end scene 114 with I hate Paris. And Marjolaine has thoughts to that.
Yeah, I guess. But this line got such a big laugh in the crowd when I first saw the movie in Paris. That's so funny. And I don't even know why he would hate Paris, because this night is a huge success for him. And the stupid Parisian pureblood wizard were very docile public, so he doesn't have to complain. So yeah, I don't know. But maybe he's just pissed because that cool skull hookah is smashed.
Well, have you considered that maybe Paris hates you too, Grindelwald?
Yeah. I mean, it comes sort of out of nowhere, doesn't it?
It does. You're right. Marjolaine's right. It makes zero sense, the line.
Because that's why I'm like, I mean, it almost feels like it's just there for comic relief, where it's like, it makes no sense for him to say that.
Yeah.
Like, if anyone has a reason to hate Paris, it's Jacob, because he didn't get food and he lost his love of a life. But, you know.
Yeah, no, I think it's just Rowling that he's putting some... cheap anti-French joke between British and, yeah. And French people, that's okay. We are used to that.
Yeah, it's the same how I laugh, fake laugh, every time that anyone was like, eh, and the Germans find that funny, so that must mean something. I'm like, eh, yeah, right. Because humor is not a thing we have in Germany. Right. So next scene, 115, we're now exterior in, why don't you say that, Marjolaine? Why should I even try?
Père Lachaise.
Ooh, that sounds so nice when you say it.
Le cimetière, yeah. Père Lachaise.
I was like, I could try, but I mean, why would I? it says a minute later, it's obviously still night.
Yeah, so I noted that Flamel, in the script, it says he has almost superhuman power. And I'm just looking at this guy and I'm like, he looks
he's
like
an alchemist.
I could break him in half if I...
Therefore, immortal and full of superhuman power.
Yeah. I mean... First of all, he's finally here. Only took him, like, what?
Yay.
The whole fight?
He had to do his little walk the whole way over here.
I mean,
it
makes sense. He walks very slowly.
And I put out the quote from the screen that says, it takes almost superhuman power to contain Grindelwald's demonic fire, which they are forced to combat with flames still more deadly. United, our heroes fight. So I think the superhuman power is to all of them together.
Yeah. It's
friendship. So not just him.
Friendship is the deadliest flames of all.
I love that
okay,
so much.
That sounds creepy.
That's my favorite scene. I love it.
Like, you know, they drive their wands to the ground. It's so cool. And then they all yell, Finite? Which, what?
Yeah. How did they know what to do? It's like, Flamel says, go in a circle, all of us together. And they're like, yep, yeah, we know which spell.
Oh, we rehearsed
we just
this.
Discussed this.
That Finite, which is a spell that ends another spell, hence the name Finite, meaning to end.
Yeah.
Who knew that it could create purifying fire? I bet Harry wishes he would have known that. He could have just been like outside the room requirement with the fiend fire, even though I know this isn't fiend fire, but out there and just gone, oh, Finite, and look at that, it's done, wow!
I'm questioning you ever read Harry Potter at this point, because Harry Potter does only know one spell, and it's called Expelliarmus.
No, he only has a little
and
more.
And he didn't have enough friends in the room to make a circle, and he wasn't on Earth, he was in underground, I don't know where, so yeah.
Okay, so I guess that Harry, Ron, and Hermione's friendship isn't really the deadly flames we found along the way.
I think
they're also children.
<That's true. laughs>
They literally have not finished their Hogwarts education because they skipped their last
year.
Oh,
yeah, that's
school,
something that you learn in seventh year charms. Flitwick's like, hey, guys.
Okay, can I talk about this magic because I love it?
Please.
And I think it's not just Finite like we know it in the Potter books. I think it's another kind of magic, and the fact that it's Flamel who brings it is so cool, and I love it because I love alchemy. And yeah, because I feel it feels like an elemental kind of magic because it's connected to the earth, so and most important, it has alchemical symbolism in the colors, because like we said earlier, Grindelwald's fire was meant to be black. And black is the color of the first step in alchemy. And Flamel's fire is yellow and red, which are the last two steps in the alchemical transformation. And of course, red is the great work, the magnum opus, so the Philosopher's Stone. And in this context, the word Finite can have a connection to the alchemical idea to go from black to red by purifying in a circle. That represent the transmutation cycle in alchemy. And yeah, that's my alchemical reading of this scene.
I have a question. Do you learn alchemy in school? How do you know that stuff?
She's an alchemist and therefore immortal.
Yeah, I'm like...
Of course we learn alchemy in school. No, that's just because I'm a nerd.
Is Nicolas Flamel life work still taught in French schools?
No, but I think I already taught that in the podcast, but I met flamel's not really flamel, but I when I was a child, I saw an animation a show in the castle that was with Nicolas Flamel, and he talked about alchemy, and I was maybe 8 or 9 years old, and it was since then that I was just passionate by alchemy, so
that's adorable. So, yeah.
I mean, all of your points are so great.
Yeah,
though.
No, this is fantastic. I love this.
Yeah.
And I, even because I love the music in all this scene, and I thought, yeah, that's just because this music is cool. But I listened to it so many times that I think it tells this story too. And I don't know, even if I know a bit about alchemy, I know nothing about music theory. But I feel like there is different phase of transformation in the film, because you move from kind of a descendant music to an ascendant music. So, but again, it may be just bullshit because I don't know anything about music theory. But yeah, I think there's something there too. But that's just me being super nerdy and super Ravenclaw.
Love it. You love to see it.
It just looked cool too, so yeah.
I was say, Marge is over here like dissecting the colors of the flames and finding the alchemical meaning, and I'm over here like, no, the graves are collapsing, they're pretty, the history.
I was a bit mad too that they will destroy Père Lachaise, because right? That's a beautiful place, but
I mean, the amount of times that the Eiffel Tower has been destroyed in movies.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There is this extremely dumb French cartoon I watch. It's called Miraculous Ladybug. Something happens to the Eiffel Tower in literally every single episode. Like, I think that's the yeah. only thing that they know about in Paris.
Yeah, not gonna lie.
So they contain the fire. It's great. They finite the crap out of it. And then Flamel comes over to Jacob and puts his hand on his shoulder. And I just imagine the... Oh my god, what's the word I'm looking for? The conversation's like, Jacob's like, now my girlfriend's a wizard Nazi. And Flamel's like, that's rough, buddy. And then my other question is, we cut to Nagini, and she's like hiding out in the shadow of a tomb. Did she help? Or was she just hiding in the tomb the whole time? Like, I'm not, no shade, I would 100% do yeah. the same thing. But did she help?
I think she was saved by Kama.
She was definitely pulled out by Kama.
Yeah. And that makes me think, I'd never realized that, but does she has a wand? Because I think we never see
her do
wand magic. Yeah. So I don't know how she could help without a wand.
Yeah, I just looked up in the screenplay again. It says, Newt and Theseus, Tina with Jacob, and Kama with Nagina all operate out from the theater.
Yeah.
So they're definitely in groups of two.
Yeah. And, you know, I wonder also...
And then it only says Newt, Theseus, Tina, Kama, and Flamel perform finita, so...
Okay, so Nagini's definitely fighting, yeah. Which is valid.
No, she isn't.
No,
yeah, she's not fighting.
Yeah, she's hiding.
You said hiding? Yeah, okay, right. Yeah. So, I mean, I suppose Marjolaine has a point. Does she have a wand?
I guess not.
Maybe she doesn't need one. I mean, we do sort of learn that different wizarding schools teach magic differently. Isn't it like the African school that sort of doesn't do wand
magic? That sounds
magic?
Right.
So, you know, I don't know how they do Indonesian magic, or if she even grew up in Indonesia, or if she grew up here. I don't know. Also here, very specific. Considering we are from three different countries on this
here
podcast.
Here in Chicago, here in the UK, here in France, here in Massachusetts, who knows?
but you know what I mean, we obviously don't really know anything about her. And then we end on obviously the brothers hug.
Oh, babies.
And then Newt says, I've chosen my side.
Babies.
And this scene is the perfect mirror to the I don't do side in the first hugging scene they have in this movie, and that's so perfect, because yeah, this time it's Newt that he's hugging his brother, and yeah, we're all crying, and we need a croissant, and yeah.
And according to the screenplay, this is literally the first time Newt has ever willingly hugged Theseus. Like, this is the first time he's ever initiated a hug. So let's just take a moment and just feel our hearts all break before we go eat a croissant.
Moment of silence for the hug.
And there's only 10 more minutes of this. I can't believe this is like almost a 2-hour episode. Because there's so much happened in just this insane 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That was a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
That wraps it up for this week, kids. So that brings us to our podcast question of the week. Do you think that the fire or Grindelwald determined who to save and who to destroy? If it was the fire, how do you think that was determined? Or if it was Grindelwald, how did he protect his followers? We would love to hear from you, so please drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. If you can, we also ask that you leave us a review on iTunes. That helps helps the algorithm, it helps more people find us, and also it just makes us feel nice when you say nice things about us. And in 2020, we all need to do nice things and feel nice, don't we? So if you wouldn't mind.
Yes, and if you're looking to find us, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie. We are also on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie. On Tumblr, we are SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com. And if you so choose, we would love to have you as a patron over at patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. We have a lot of fun benefits like our Common Room, which is our Facebook group. And also, we have a new benefit, which is a cool sticker every month for our Thunderbird level patrons, and they're really cool. So if you like Fantastic Beasts, you'll love these stickers, and head on over to Patreon and join us.
I'm Anne.
I'm Juliana.
I'm Oreo.
And I'm Marjolaine. Case closed.